Your favourite film is awful.
Hello, and welcome to Your Favourite Film is Awful, the weekly show where we take your favourite films and defend them against negative reviews. I'm with Sean Grimsley. How you doing, Sean?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. It's just me and you today. It's different. It's weird. It's unusual.
It's not unusual. In fact, it is.
Today, as the title suggests, we are doing Jaws. Jaws, 1975. And it's amazing. Only you here. It's only you. So do you know what that means?
I have to explain what it's about.
Exactly.
Here we go. Okay. Amityville, East Coast of America. A new sheriff in town, new shark in town. Sharks start eating people. Sheriff has to deal with shark. Jaws.
Mwah. Perfection.
I mean, there's a lot more going on thematically, but, you know, we'll get into that.
I mean, at the end of the day, a simple plot is a simple plot. But according to Dora, with a half-star review, it's not merely a simple plot to a movie. Shit movie, demonized sharks, and unfairly represented the great white. After this released, countless other movies, shows, books, etc. came out that painted them as monsters. You are more likely to die from a falling coconut than you are from a shark attack.
I mean, I would like to see the experiment where you get someone to jump in to shark-infested waters and then get them to stand under a tree for a coconut to hit them on it and see which one... I mean, in that closed circuit, yeah, fair. But
you can go swimming with sharks. So
you can. I've been swimming with sharks. I've been swimming with sharks. Not
and you're
great
still
whites.
Here.
Granted, I'm
ever,
still here.
Have you ever been under a coconut tree?
I have. Yeah. Oh. I have, and still here as well. So ooh. I think what we can conclude is that I am unbreakable.
The immortal Sean.
just don't drown me in a puddle. although you know, I was thinking that I have been swimming with sharks, and nobody here has seen whether I have a leg. Like, I've been sat down the entire time. I could be missing a leg from that coconut tree. Coconut bit my leg.
The coconut got you.
But no, I mean, thank you, Dora, for taking the time out from exploring. I can imagine. That, you know, something like Jaws is a bit underwhelming when you've done all of that exploring. And also, I apologise for that joke. Every Christmas, I get something Shaun the Sheep themed. So I do apologise. But no, assuming Dora is a woman or identifies as such, she's absolutely right. I mean, the film was one of the worst things to ever happen to sharks.
To sharks, yeah.
Ever. Like, the population of sharks, like declined dramatically in the 10 years after Jaws came out, and it's never ever got back to where it was. And the main reason for that is the idea that that sharks operate in the same way like Jaws does, and they're just going to eat us if we go into the water.
I think
Dora makes a good point that you are more likely to die from falling or a coconut falling in your head or a car crash or whatever. But you know, it is horrific. But it has nothing to do with the quality of the film. If anything, I would suggest that it suggests that the film is actually, and this is me saying it, and I will never be dissuaded from this, Jaws is the best horror film ever made. It's the greatest horror film ever made. When you look at it in that statistic, you have your monster. It is a monster that does exist in the real world. And our response to those things as a result of this film... We killed them all, just in case, so the monsters don't get us.
And thus showing that we are the true monsters.
100%.
I mean, yeah, no, I understand your reasoning there. It is one of those that there was such a visceral reaction and such like a... And I feel we do that all of the time. Like, was it Lights Out, I think was the name of it, where it's like you turn off the light and a monster appears.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure there was a spike in, like, people that were afraid of the dark or, like, actually went, yeah, by the way, I've been, like, afraid of the dark for a while. I've just not actually said anything.
So that was like the gateway to people like being honest with their friends and family and neighbors and saying, I've been scared of the dark my entire life. I'm a 40-year-old person.
Exactly.
That's hilarious.
With Jaws, there is that kind of, it's in the ocean and we're all fucking, like on some level, we're all terrified of the ocean. If not like the surface and the vastness of it, the depth and the fact that no one's been to the bottom of the ocean. It's it's too much pressure. You die. It's over. And we're all like, space. And it's like, no, Earth's scary.
Oh, 100%. Like, I think James Cameron, the film director, he's the person that's gone the deepest down in the ocean. Mm. I could be wrong against that. Listeners, writers
of the podcast.
Write in. There we go. Listeners, write us. There we go. Mm. Slow it down, Sean. Slow it down. Get excited about the shark movie. But yeah, I mean, those her argument for all of that, I think, is fair and valid. But I don't think it's a good enough reason not to enjoy this film. That said, if you had a time machine, could you go back and make Jaws not happen so that we could save shark populations? I mean, there's a movie in that, surely. That's actually a really good idea for like an A24 comedy movie. Time joke. Let's cut this bit because we're writing.
We need to copyright the ideas.
I know. Yeah, we're turning gold butter here. We need to copyright this.
Love it. But then, like, what would you change it with? Because you can stop it being sharks. But what are you gonna do? Make the Kraken a big thing before the Kraken became such a big thing in pop culture?
I don't know.
There's nothing else that I. Off the top of my head, apart from an octopus or a kraken, that would get that same fear as the shark.
I wonder if we might have bypassed the great mythical sea creature altogether and gone with some more land-based dwellers, Jaws could have been moose.
Moose.
Have you seen a moose? Have you ever seen
moose,
how big
moose
they are?
Moose are terrifying. They're like
moose are massive.
What is it, like 9 feet tall, massive
eight, nine
antlers.
Feet. Yeah. I saw one in Canada and I could not believe. Really strangely, my girlfriend asked me a few months ago, like, how big is actually a moose? I'm like, I had the same response. Huge. I did. They're fucking massive. And she didn't believe me. She genuinely thought I was making it up.
Some part of your brain is always going to associate moose with stag and deer, and they're like normal horse size. And moose is like, no, moose will kill anything.
But they're actually pretty gentle creatures. They generally leave things alone. I think they're herbivores, actually. So
yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but I wonder. You know, even us just talking about that, like I think it works as a horror story. Within certainly within the sequences where the shark attacks, and the entirety of the whole third act, because it is that monster that just is unrelenting, and there's nothing you can do with it. You know, it goes hand in hand with Jason Voorhees or Mike Myers, you know, that they just persist and persist and persist. And, you know, that's the thing that in the real world sharks don't do. And that's where that kind of breakdown between, you know, what is a film function is different from what is a actual like function of the being themselves. And, you know, unfortunately, us humans are, you know, notoriously afraid. And when we're afraid, we do silly things. And that is the fallout of this movie. But focusing on the movie itself, I don't think that's a reason not to like it if you just take the movie as it is.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, no, I understand that. It's a good counter-argument. Good job being on solo defense.
Steven Spielberg, you can send me some Jaws merchandise.
Right, next review. 1 out of 10. This is from Dantastic. Love the name. Dantastic.
Strong, very strong. I like that.
The second time I've watched this, I seriously had doubts in Steven Spielberg's skills as a director. But then again, it was made in 1975. This music was unbearably boring to sit through. Directors must realize that blood and gore in a film isn't what makes this type of film good. In 1975, my opinion will have been a lot different, but it's 2006 now, and it bores me to watch this film. the only part of this film that was at the least mildly frightening was not frightening at all. It gave you a shock, nothing more. People who love this film have the right to their opinions, but in my opinion, this is one of the worst of Spielberg. Go watch War of the Worlds or Close Encounters of the Third Kind. These are the true greatest Spielberg films.
I mean, so many things in that to dissect.
There's a lot to unpack.
I'm not sure if you saw my face when he said the music.
I saw a lot of expressions, but it was one of those that the review's short enough that I was like, nah, you can wait.
I would challenge every single person, including John Williams, to hum on the spot right now any piece of music from War of the Worlds and then hum anything from Jaws. Because I guarantee you, no one would be able to do War of the Worlds, and every single person. And this is so I used to be a teacher, and yeah. I taught film, and my first lesson as like an introductory lesson as to, you know, what we're going to do is I talked about Jaws as a way to introduce people to stuff that happens in movies and movie making techniques that you wouldn't necessarily see, but that we're going to analyze and explore.
Yeah.
Always use Jaws. And the first question I ever asked my students, put your hand up if you've seen the movie Jaws. Now, I was teaching youngest, probably 14 years old. And elder at most 18 years old. It didn't matter if it was the 14-year-olds or the 18-year-olds or anyone in between. Nearly every single person had put their hand up if I said, have you ever seen Jaws? And I'd get them to put their hands down and I'd say, put your hands up if they're... you've seen any other film from 1975, 76. And it's a room full of pockets. No one's hands are up at all. Give or take a few people. But I think that's a testament to the power of this film, is that it transcends, you know, experience, because it feels, it's a real world monster that we all understand exists and is out there. And it's the thing that I think people forget about this movie is that it's good. It is as a horror film, and I will say it is my favorite horror film. It's such a good, like, character based story as well. It's about this out of towner who doesn't know how to deal with all the bureaucracy of small town politics, and you know, he doesn't have much power or sway in that, and you know how that gets completely, like, how that gets so mishandled. And then you have that entire first act, the third act, where the movie just completely slows down and you just get to know these characters. Yes. And it's a wonderful family film. I think it's a wonderful character film. The score is one of the most iconic scores of all time. So I'm sorry, Dantastic. That is ludicrous. That's not fantastic, Dantastic. I can't remember every single thing else that Dan said in there, but I don't think... I can appreciate, you know, it's hard to look at certain things that have happened in this was in 2006, even since 2006, our appetite and what we consider to be scary or like gory or gratuitous or anything like that has changed dramatically even since 2006 to now. Between 75 and 2006 must have been huge. But I actually think this is a terrifying film. I think when the violence happens, it's shot in a really clever way. A very smart and a very, like, it's graphic, but it never tips over the edge. It gets in that fine line to get the rating that it does, and it's just horrific enough to really. I personally found it to stay with you for life. I think about Jaws every time I get in a swimming bath. Like if I go to the pool, I think, what about if there was a shark in here? Like every time I get in the ocean, I think it, and you know, I don't think that when I turn the light off. Although apparently some people do. So.
No, that's fair. It's hard to... Because Dantastic says a lot of things, but they don't follow through with a lot of things. Like, they say how there's only one part of the film that's at least mildly frightening. But it's not frightening at all. It gave you a shock. And that's it. That's all... That line is no vague hint to a person that was watching the film.
I know which bit it was.
It's the bit where he gets eaten.
No. I think it's the bit where the body pops out from the boat when Dickie Dreyfuss is swimming. It's it's just before they go off on the boat. It's just before they go off on the boat trip, I believe.
Mm. Or is it the bit where he's throwing chum and he looks away and the shark just appears? Like, there are several jump scary moments, and Dantastic has just said, there's one. There's one moment that gives you a shock. It's like, but come on, bruh. There are many moments.
I mean, arguably, the one that you just said about the chum is the most iconic, like, jump scare of all time, because it's also the big reveal. It's the first time in a movie where you fully see the shark. I still remember watching that. I must have been like 6 or 7 when I was first shown this film, which is kind of crazy, but also apparently everybody else is, basically. You know, like, it's just a universal film.
Mm.
It actually is a universal film, so.
What a lovely pun.
Got it.
Would you like a review of the time? So this is a review from June 20th, 1975.
Oh, amazing.
Yes. This is from Charles Champlin. It was on a much longer review. I've top and tailed it. There are a couple paragraphs. I'll pause after a paragraph like I usually do with critical reviews.
Where was this printed? Where did it come from? Can you say?
I think it was the New York Times.
Okay, cool. No, that's cool. It's good to know.
It was definitely an American site that I had to use a VPN to get to. First and crucial thing to say about the movie Universal has made from Peter Benchley's bestseller Jaws, opening citywide today, is that the PG rating is grievously wrong and misleading. The studio has rightly added its cautionary notices in the ads, and the fact is that Jaws is too gruesome for children and likely to turn the stomachs of the impressionable at any age. So that was their opening paragraph.
I think it's interesting to contrast that with what was said just previously. You know, like, defying age. I don't know how old that critic was when they saw it, but if they, you know, if they were slightly of an older generation, you know, they would have grown up on very different movies. I think it is worth noting that Jaws is kind of considered the first big blockbuster. You know, a term which literally means people were queuing round the block of the cinema to get in. Like, they were waiting for like 2 screenings outside just to see it, because, I mean, the book was a big deal. I think, you know, it's the model that Hollywood has certainly followed now. It's got to be franchised. It's got to be based on a book. It's got to be based on a comic book. We've got to be able to franchise it. And it's a model that is coming under and has been coming under a lot of scrutiny of late. But it's certainly, you know, regarded that way. And I think when, you know, the 70s were a particularly sensitive time for critics and filmmakers. You know, a lot of what was called the video nasties came out between in the 70s and 80s, and, you know, what the censor had a massive play in what it was. And, you know, looking back at it, it is crazy that this film did get a PG rating. But by today's standard, it's like, this is top tier. This is the kind of stuff that there's not a lot of filmmakers now that are able to make stuff that I actually think is adult, but also can be accessible. You know, I think Joe Dante does a pretty good job of it with movies like The Hole. And there was a little trend a while ago. I can't remember the name of the director, but it's the guy that did Disturbia. He went on to do Eagle Eye. His name will come back. DJ Caruso. He kind of straddled that line quite well with Disturbia. And I always appreciated that as a younger watcher, when someone was just like, yeah, this can be accessible to kids but still be daunting. Perfect example, the modern It. Andy Muschietti's take on It. Now, they went for the hard rating, which is fine. But, you know, I think it's the kind of thing that I probably would show one of my kids, if I ever had kids, before they were 18. Do you know what I mean? Probably show them when they were like 11 or 12 or something like that, because I think, you know, it's those kind of movies work really, really well when, and this is kind of the premise of It completely, is, you know, the true horrors of the world are what humans do to each other, and it's the horror of growing up. And I think that's what Jaws does that really, really well as well. It's kind of taken the story of this guy that you really like. You see here, he's a really good father. He's a great family man. And he's just trying his best. And he's, you know, ultimately, by the time you get to the end, spoiler alert, people, but he's willing to die. Like, it's literally what he does. It's, all of them are willing to die to try and, you know, like, do the right thing. And I think there's, you know, that's a really rich text. And I think that's something a lot of people can grip hold of.
Yeah. And to kind of go on off of that a little bit, when you were saying about humans, the most evil sort of things, most horror stories. With this, you have Jaws, the shark, which is just an unbridled force of nature. But so then the actual like villain or like closest human villain you get is the mayor, who's willing to put everyone's lives on the line for the sake of profit. Like the mere idea of it would be like letting children play in a landmine, in a field of landmines, because that's a place to make money. And it's such like a, you dickhead.
Well, you know, doing Jaws for this episode came about because of a wonderful meme that went around of someone photoshopping Boris Johnson's head onto the mayor from Jaws saying, you know, yeah, it's safe, open the beaches. For those of you not in the UK right now, our prime minister, prime minister-elect, not elected by me, has decided to basically get rid of all of the COVID measures in place, even though not everyone is vaccinated, not enough people are vaccinated for really what scientists say vaccines take hold. But he's also, you know, taken away common sense laws like mandatory mask wearing, because, you know, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure scientists know how these things spread. And you should pay attention to them. So it's interesting. I was subsequently sent another link to an article in the Independent newspaper saying that Boris Johnson's been comparing himself to that mayor for years because he thinks the mayor did the right thing in Jaws. And that tells you, personally, from my perspective, that tells you every single thing you need to know about Boris Johnson and our prime minister. But the parallels between that are crazy. And, you know, your description, we've basically been sent into a minefield to go play.
Oh, dear.
It's got political.
See, you pulled in your political gender. I thought you just picked this because it was one of the fan submissions.
So, no, but also it is one of my favourite films. So. But that's how it came about. I was telling the story of its genesis. Not the story of its Phil Collins, the story of its genesis.
Right, we're skipping to near the end. These are the last three paragraphs of Charles Champlin's review, because he just kind of, you know, explained the plot. He touched upon a few characters, but overall, it was a normal critical review sort of stuff. So we go into the third to last paragraph. Young Steven Spielberg, who was the director, shows, as he has before, an uncommon flair for handling big action. He and the script are much less successful in the man-to-man confrontations, but in the man-to-shark meetings. Intimacy is not yet his strength. Eyes, for those just listening, they were the biggest, shiniest eyes I've ever seen.
Look, Steven Spielberg became one of the most famous filmmakers of all time on the release of this film. Like, it, well, regardless of anything else he would done, he would always be remembered. This film is iconic, and, you know, he's a big part of that reason. Yeah, he was young. And, you know, he almost set this precedent that I think everybody that wants to do something creative is judged by now. It's like, how did he do so much so young? Because his cine literacy at that point, you know, this film is just so rich. Its use of the color yellow to show when people's vision is obscured. The use of the amazing contra zoom that's used. You know, the vertigo shot. Some people call it different things, but that's what I call it. It's just next level. Like, one of cinema's most, like, it features a number of cinema's most iconic moments all in one movie. You know, it truly is a groundbreaking thing. And I completely disagree about the humor to humor moments. There's a wonderful, beautiful moment that would not exist in a lot of films where Roy Schneider and his son are sat by the dinner table and he's like, give me a kiss. And just because I need it. It's like, that is, it's so rare for a character to say something where what they actually need is like intimacy. And, you know, like, I mean, like just someone just to make them feel like they're not worthless. And, you know, like typically in movies, you get that thematically where a character might state, a recent example, Chris Pratt in the Tomorrow War literally states like in the first 5 minutes of the movie, it's like, my life was meant for something more than this, you know, or something like that. And it's like, oh, okay, so that's the theme of this movie, even though that, you know, you're telling me instead of showing me. It just gives that character so much depth. It gives, you know, it gives the film so much more depth. You know, like, it really, you know, when Roy Schneider's in the water, a place where he is actually terrified of being, you're not just thinking about whether he's going to be eaten by a shark at that point. You're like, God, that son's going to grow up without a father, and that's a real relationship that we've seen. And that's talent. Not only is that in the script, but that's the way it's handled is just phenomenal. Mm. You know, there's a lot of Steven Spielberg that I don't like, but every so often he can still come out with what I consider to be an absolute stone cold hit. And so keep them coming, Steven. I wish you'd pick certain choices over others, but I think he started off strong, and I think in every Steven Spielberg movie, there's always something worth watching.
Yeah.
And his command over the camera is especially noticeable in this film, but it's something that he's always got a good eye for.
Yeah. To go off that, because this paragraph mentions the script as well, and I just want to circle back to one of the things you mentioned earlier, which was the boat scene where the quiet moment, it's the sun setting, they're just having a drink, having a chat, and it's that, like, the playful one-upmanship where, like, they're drinking. It's like, oh, check out this guy, this thing, this thing, this thing. And then you've got your main chief, like, looks at his stomach and he's got a scar there, but he, like, keeps shum because it's not his moment. And then it's like he's got the scar on his arm. It's like, oh, what's that? It was tattoo. Does that say mother on it? And the guy's like, no, it said this. And then it's like backstory time, exposition, and why this character is so loopy. And I thought, like, from a script point of view, it was nice to have that flow into this moment as opposed to kind of just throwing out exposition here and there, because they could have quite easily been like, oh, he's not been right since, bleh, as opposed to having this nice, intimate moment.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing, because you almost, the way that Quint is introduced into the movie, he's almost like another villain, but on the land, you know. But he's actually the only person that knows what he's talking about. He doesn't necessarily have the best delivery. So it's really interesting when you get to what is essentially the entire third act of that movie, to completely slow it down, and you get moments where, yeah, there's a little bit. I mean, essentially, the whole Indianapolis story is him, you know, exposing, like, it's a heavy exposition dump. But my God, if that performance and actually the content of that story doesn't make you, like, sit on the edge of your seat, as well as serving a wonderful purpose for us understanding who this guy was. You know, by the time that Quint does die, a painfully horrific and ironic death, but one that was seemingly inevitable somehow. And even within that scene, you kind of get the impression that he knows that. For him, I always felt like this was, that whole third act is, that shark was one of the ones that was there. That was the one that ate the most people. That's why, you could read it that way. That's how he, like, for me, that's how I always saw him kind of approaching that shark. It wasn't a shark. It was one of the sharks.
Yeah.
Just an incredible scene for all three of those actors. You know, I'm a huge Richard Dreyfuss fan. Always have been. Since seeing Jaws so young, you know, especially in the last few years, he hasn't really done a lot more recently, but my God, that man's an incredible talent. Robert Shaw and Roy Schneider, of course, you know, that just incredible performances. just I completely disagree with that idea that the human elements of this don't work.
And to touch upon what you just said, the acting and the performances, it's one of those that, and I've noticed it here and there in all films, but acting is also listening, and you can tell that they're all listening to the story, which gives the story so much power. Whilst in other films that I've seen, there have been times on screen where a performer doesn't think they're on camera anymore and so has stopped acting. And you're like, oh dear, you were in tears in the same shot. Just something blocked the shot. And you're like,
It is crazy when you're on set working with actors and they just have a certain something when you're in a take and just like, man, this is magic. And then the second the camera rolls, like they can just be like, yeah, so like I'm going down Tesco after this. Do you wanna? And it's crazy, like to have that command over your, not just your emotions, but your the way in which you have just such a control over your body.
Yeah.
To be able to know every little movement is quite something. Matt Damon actually is incredible at it. Like Matt Damon's a solid actor. Can do a lot of stuff, but it's the physicality. I don't think he gets enough credit for that. He really absorbs into the movements and the minor gestures for each individual character, and I think that's he's someone that you could look at for that.
Mm. Right, let us continue. So this is the penultimate, the second to last. The ending is a pulp story hokum, calculated, I suspect, to affirm that it has all been in gory good fun. The nightmare was only a dream. Still, it would not be surprising if "Don't go near the water" turned out to be the motto along the ocean beaches this summer. The frights, like those from Earthquake and Towering Inferno, are not put away by happy endings. So that's paragraph two.
Is his argument essentially saying that he wasn't happy that they beat the shark at the end?
I think the takeaway is that it's resolved.
Sure.
And that's a bad thing.
I mean, by the time you get to Jaws 2, though, which is actually a very passable sequel, it's fine. I think it's an okay film.
The ratings say otherwise.
but in contrast to Jaws 3. But, you know, yeah, but it doesn't bother me. By the mere existence of Jaws 2, I never rewatched Jaws 2. I haven't seen Jaws 2 since I was a kid. But I know it exists. So even by the end of that movie, I'm always thinking, what about if she had a baby? What about if there's another one in the water all along? What about if Bruce had another Bruce? Mm. And yeah, I don't know. It doesn't bug me. It doesn't bug me at all. It's still, you know, and in fairness, Steven Spielberg does do relative, within reason, happy endings. Like that is a trait of his work. So, you know, I can't ever watch it without having known that fact again. So I have no objectivity there, I'm afraid.
No, that's fair. It is a staple. I don't think I can think of a single Steven Spielberg film that doesn't end in, at least without like a happy tint.
Yeah, I mean, still, Saving Private Ryan isn't like the most uplifting ending because essentially, you know, but they do in fact save Private Ryan. Yeah. So, I mean, technically a good thing, but it's got a tinge of sadness to it. Mm. I mean, you know, by the time he made Indiana Jones 4, the ending of that movie, I couldn't have been happier for that to end. So,
good joke. Okay, last paragraph. The argument has always been that tragedy, violence, and terror witnessed purges us of them. The Grand Guignol Theatre of Paris, with its bloodletting and eye gougings invigorously faked, was thought to have denatured shock by making it amusing. After Jaws, you do wonder what it was that was purged and what it takes to entertain these days. And that's the end.
Yeah, so I'm just reading the review at the same time.
Yeah, that's
fine. I don't know that theatre. I'm guessing it's some sort of like circus the grand, where they gouged eyes and yeah.
It'd be like I believe it's like the biggest. It's the equivalent of like the Globe in London.
Sure,
but you know,
I'm guessing he's comparing it to like on stage violence.
Yeah, it'll be macabre. It'll be those sort of like visceral. They're doing a lot of action, like the blood plaques and stuff that we'd now find in today's movies, but in a theatrical performance.
I kind of get the impression that this reviewer thought that this movie was too violent, and I don't think that tracks anymore. I
mean, he does start the review saying that it was misrated, so that...
Yeah. I wonder how they feel about it now. We may not be able to answer that question because they may be past. I don't know how old they are. They could still be alive, though. So
54 years ago, and then he would have had to become a famous reviewer to get his review in.
He could still be alive. Let's be honest. Clint Eastwood's still going.
This is very true.
I don't know entirely how to present to that because I don't think that opinion holds up anymore.
I wouldn't say it doesn't hold up. I'd say it was misjudged, but that's expected because of the time. Like nowadays, we have our SAWs, our Hostels, our The Purge is like these are all those violent, very visceral, they're body horror and they're gore porn. Is that
torture porn.
Which, like, if Charles has seen those films, I'm sure he would have ended the review differently because it's taken some real mad shit nowadays to scare people with torture porn. So
yeah, I mean, you know, if this film were released today, I don't know. I presume it has a PG rating still because it's carried over, but is it a 12A? The problem with the censors, especially at this time, and even now, is like it's the things you can't account for. So like when Toby Hooper was making the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, he had the guidance from the ratings board there and was making sure that he didn't violate any of the things so he could get the correct rating in America, which I believe is an R rating. I think once it goes to NC-17, you have to have an adult accompany. And so to avoid that, he had the thing there and he was making sure they didn't cross it. And then they cut the film, presented it to the censors, and they gave it like an NC-17 or whatever it was. And he was like, but I haven't violated any of these rules. And they were like, yeah, but you didn't account for the dread. And it's like, you know, it's that classic thing of how movies work. When you put one image with another image, they create a meaning. And when you, you know, do lot, when you put colors in them and all of this stuff, you can't ever account for that. And it's such a subjective thing. At the time, I cannot totally understand why this was so shocking.
Yeah.
But I would feel very comfortable showing this to my kid. And I think it's because it actually isn't unnecessarily violent.
Yeah.
And I think that's why a lot of people do. You know, there is a little bit of blood in it, but you don't see the graphic details of it all. I think Quinn's death is the most graphic. Personally.
It is.
Although, but I think the Alex Kittner, the boy that dies on the yellow Lilo, is the most horrific death in that movie. And that's the thing that I think that people, killing a child in a movie, is if you do that in a movie straight up front, it's like, whoa, anything can happen in this movie because you're not supposed to do that. And I think that's really where Jaws succeeds, is that it has the guts to do that, but also it puts weight on it. It really, like, Alex Kittner's mother slaps Brody around the face, even though it's not his fault. It's a wonderful, wonderful piece of writing, filmmaking, performance. I mean, you're on Roy Schneider's side, but you understand why his mother's done it. You feel so sorry for them. Like, the beach sequence alone is a masterclass in film education. I can't. It is the most definitive shark movie out. there still. It can't be beaten. It's not 100% to do with the shark. It's to do with all the things that are character driven and as a result of the shark.
Yeah. To very quickly answer your earlier question, for 37 years, it was a PG in the UK. And then in 2012, it got upped to a 12A with its upcoming theatrical re-release.
Interesting.
So,
interesting. Yeah. I wonder what... Yeah. I mean, it was always straddling those two things, I would imagine. It's strange after in 2012. Like,
I think that might have just been when it got a re-release.
Yeah, but like, why after all this time would you need to change it? Like, so 2011, you could go see a screening of that film as at any age, essentially, parental guidance. And then in 2012, you had to have permission or go with someone that was an adult if you were 12 and under.
I mean, maybe with the re-release, they upgraded the graphics and
possibly.
Such. Like, yeah, I mean, and then they were like, hey, this is HD blood now. it's up the rating.
It's that 4K blood.
It's 4K blood. We can up the rating now. We've got the chance.
Or I wonder if, you know, and this was the thing with the censors all along, I wonder if it's a bureaucratic thing. You know, someone's taken over the job at the BBFC or in America, and they just have a difference of opinion. And so it gets changed that way, you know. It's hard with censorship because it's like you're asking a group of people to make a decision on your behalf.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy that, you know, there are movies that you can, well, it's less of an issue over here, but essentially in America, you can go buy a gun, join the army, shoot and kill someone before you can go see a movie because it's too violent. Yeah. Or typically, not because it's too violent, because it's too sexually explicit. And I always found that like a really strange thing that we gatekeep certain things in that regards. And we tend to be more sensitive about sex than we do violence. But, you know, that's people, write in. Tell us what your thoughts on this are.
Yes, do that. On the Twitter, the Facebook, and the Instagram. So this next review is going to be from Cody G. Dreich. I'm going to say Dreich. Ever since I first heard about it, I wondered how you make a suspenseful and terrifying movie with a great plotline about a shark. 46 years after it came out, I now see you don't. You make a boring, drawn-out film about a police chief in a coast town that had two shark attacks. For most of the movie, you don't see anything of the shark, not even a trail of ripples in the water. When you do see the shark, it looks like a giant rubber puppet. It was so close to going to sleep in the middle of it, but didn't figuring I would never go back and finish it if I did. When it ended, I was thinking, I really hope I get to go to the beach this summer. That looked nice. In the end, it's a 2-hour movie, and there is maybe half an hour where it seems the shark is an imminent threat.
I mean, if you want a shark movie like that, Deep Blue Sea exists.
Deep Blue Sea does exist.
You know, I think this is... I listened to a podcast with Steven Soderbergh recently talking about his new movie. It was the Marin podcast. And okay. And Soderbergh said, I've made a movie, not a film. And Marin called him on the distinction. And he said, well, a film is something that when you watch it, you're like, this was either made for awards or you recognize it has a certain weight to it in its dramaticness that it could be put forward for awards. And a movie is something that is for entertainment purposes only.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I like that.
I kind of got what he means. It's not an exact science, and there are certain things that win awards that I'm like, that's a movie, not a film. But there are certain movies that deserve awards. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
No. And certain films that don't, because they just feel like they're going for awards.
Yes.
I think that, you know, in terms of actually really good shark movies, it's slim pickings. And Jaws was certainly the first, but it's a film. And, you know, I don't think it was necessarily going for awards, and that, you know, it's quite ironic that it's the first blockbuster, but it has incredible movie moments, but it does what Steven Spielberg does best. He knows how to straddle that line between making a movie and making a film, and he tends to, he swirls in that. This is more a film than it is a movie, I think. And you know, if you want a proper, like, sharks eating people in a really fun way for 90 minutes, Deep Blue Sea is out there. And it's a little bit more stupid. But I certainly don't mean that as an insult. It's so much fun. And that's, if you want that, go for that. But in my head, those two are the only two really iconic shark movies. And the reason is, they both have nothing but iconic deaths.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Wait. What about Sharknado? That's got sharks in it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the Nado aspect of that is the is the
it
thing.
Adds a new element to the threat. It's not pure shark film.
It's not a pure shark film.
Yeah, no, I get that. I agree. It's very... It's dependent on taste as well from the individual, where Cody watched this and they found it boring whilst you said earlier that you were on the edge of your seat. So like it is one of those that you need to rewatch this and Cody needs to get into Deep Blue Sea and maybe even Sharknado, because that's probably going to be something that they're going to deem more enjoyment because it's more faster pace action, the threat's more immediate, and it is less time with these characters. And if I'm remembering correctly, more time in a kitchen that's flooded with sharks approaching you. Does
Correct.
That happen?
That's a scene with LL Cool
J. Years.
But it's interesting. I saw that movie when it came out in 1999, so it was 11, maybe 12 years old, depending on when it came out. And it might have even been 98, I can't remember. But again, it really stayed with me because for me, it's got some iconic moments in it. You know, it's never trying to scale the dizzy heights that I think Jaws does. But it's a movie. And when Samuel Jackson goes, it's incredible. It's an incredible moment. And it's like, It's for me, those are the only two really like up there shark movies. I might be forgetting one. Please, people, do let us know. My film knowledge is not complete, nor should it be. So,
nor will it ever be, because far too many films release on the daily.
You know, so feel free to correct me, but I think they're going for different things. I do also think it's interesting talking about not seeing the shark, because that wasn't originally the plan. You know, it's just they had so many issues with that. The robot shark they used was called Bruce. They had so many issues with it that that's the approach they ended up taking. Is like, why don't we just save it all to the end? It was a real laborious shoot, really, really difficult. Nobody thought this movie was going to work, and suddenly it gets all put together, and Steven Spielberg becomes Steven Spielberg. There's an incredible book about it actually called The Jaws Log. I believe it's called, or The Jaws Diaries. I've got it here somewhere. I'm just trying to see if I can access it quickly. But the making of Jaws book is phenomenal. It's just as good as the movie. It's the ultimate behind the scenes. I think it's called The Jaws Logs.
That's okay.
The Jaws Log.
If people are interested, I'm sure Jaws behind the scene book will suffice in a search engine of their choosing.
Absolutely worth a read.
Okay. The last review was just about how American Hollywood grabbed this film and created blockbusters. And we've already touched upon that earlier. So, because we're running out of time anyway, I'm just not going to do that review. And instead, I shall ask the question, defense has rested. Is the film awful?
Absolutely not. Jaws is one of the most important movies ever made.
It's great. It's a good time. Because it's in the zeitgeist so much, as I was rewatching it for today, I was like, have I seen Jaws? Have I seen Jaws? Or have I just seen enough of it out and about because it's so successful and has this presence with us even now, what is that, 50, nearly 50 years later, that I can, I've like the scene, the zoom, the focus where he like leans up and the lady and's like, oh, fuck, get out of the water. Like that zoom and then the chum shot. I feel you don't even need to have seen the film to know those two shots. Which is great. Normally it's like lines of dialogue as opposed to camera movements and things in shot. Ah, it's great. It's a good time. It's a good time.
It's an incredible time, you know, and it's to try and explain to people its impact is the only other thing I think you can really compare it to is Jurassic Park by Steven Spielberg. Because it's, again, you know, people seem to, a lot of the criticisms of Jaws being slow and being a movie, Jurassic Park is more of a, sorry, and Jaws not being enough of a movie. I think Jaws is more, Jurassic Park is more of a movie than Jaws. But it kind of follows the same structure. Like, Jurassic Park is really slow. Other than the opening sequence, much like Jaws, nothing happens again for another hour. Like, you get to go places. And then suddenly the big thing happens, which is, you know, the dinosaur T-Rex splits everybody up, which is essentially the Kitna boy getting eaten by the shark. And then it slows down again to have all of these wonderful character moments until the very end. The structure of those movies is almost identical, but somehow Jurassic Park is more of a movie and less of a film. But I wonder if that is because, you know, they kind of had to make those smaller character moments in Jaws because the shark wasn't working the way that they wanted to, so they kind of had to adapt. You know, it's that it's that age-old argument of, is constraint, does it breed creativity? And, you know, as you watch filmmakers get older, you know, Tarantino's talking about retiring and saying, you know, filmmakers past a certain age stop making their great films. I wonder, and he's a good example of this, does that start to happen because you don't have the restrictions that you had when you first started out?
Well, yeah, there is always it's as soon as people get to a certain level, everyone around them just becomes yes men. Yep. And it's you can do no wrong until you release it and the audience doesn't like it.
Exactly that. And that's, you know, Spielberg's, I think, a really good example of a director that has had that problem within reason. You know, something like Ready Player One, I think it's really interesting that the post-production process on that was so long that he went off and made The Post. And The Post, to me, is classic Spielberg. I think it's his best film in a very, very long time, probably since Catch Me If You Can. And Ready Player One, I really just didn't engage with a great deal. I actually didn't hate it as much as I anticipated I would. But I think it's interesting that he's a filmmaker that's able to do both. And I think Jaws is a really good encapsulation of a filmmaker that can do that.
Very quickly touching on your Jurassic Park analogy, I feel that the reason that's more of a move, like I feel the difference there isn't so much the shark problem that you're talking about, and it's purely because Jurassic Park has an open shirt Jeff Goldblum in it. And it just makes it more accessible to people. Like, more people are drawn in because Jeff Goldblum, like...
Yeah, I mean, there has been some online chatter about how you're the Jeff Goldblum of this podcast and more topless Luke.
These are your words. I was genuinely what are you on about?
I am the voice of the people, sir. So it's just a consideration. Listeners, I've put it out there. So, you know, I've done at this point all I can.
Very amusing. Right, I am... Double bill. We've spoken about a few films, so I just want to start off. You cannot say Deep Blue Sea because we've mentioned it far too much.
Okay.
Although it's too good of a pick. Like, off the record, that should be a pick that you do is these two films, because it just makes sense. And also Jurassic Park, because again, you've just mentioned it, and I feel like it's too good of a pick, and you've thrown it away. You've shot yourself in the foot. To give you some time to think, I'll tell you what you shouldn't double bill this with, because I did it by mistake, and that is to double bill this with Space Jam: A New Legacy. because just don't do that. That was a bad. I had to do it because of time restraints and like pre-made plans, and it wasn't a good call. Don't do
that's
that.
That's hilarious.
I mean, I'm tempted to say Space Jam now.
Oh, well, Space Jam with any film is it's a beautiful dessert.
Oh, no. If I were to double bill this with something else, I mean, I'd be looking for something that skirts that line between being a film and being a movie, which I think Jurassic Park is a great double bill, but you're looking at Steven Spielberg. I mean, I think this may not be my final answer, and on another episode I may chime in and just say, just want to add to this, but I don't think it's a bad idea to double bill Jaws with Star Wars.
Yeah, no.
If you're looking at what blockbusters can do, Star Wars is a slow...
Yeah, the first two big ones.
It's a slow movie. There's a lot of talking. There's a lot of scenes where it just comes down really small. And it's interesting that those are essentially the first blockbusters. So, yeah, Star Wars. And you know, if we're talking about the ending not being the final ending of this film and actually me thinking there's another shark, fuck it, watch Jaws 2.
Yeah.
But then, with Deep Blue Sea, I'd totally double bill it with Jaws 3. Just saying. It's been
fair,
now.
Fair. I shot myself in the foot here. I have no idea. I have no ideas. What would I watch it with? I'm feeling something apparently. I did it and that's cool. I'd say I want like a pirate film. Is there maybe Pirates of the Caribbean? I feel like the sea theme would have been nice. And yeah, you can have like this very deep, intimate fucking Charles, intimate film involving a shark, and then have your like fun, bombastic Pirates of the Caribbean film afterwards to enjoy, or either way around. I'd say do it that way around though, just so that you end on a higher note. But then Jaws would be a better film to some people. Oh, the questions of semantics. Which order should you do? Who knows? That's for you to decide, listener, not for me. It's your choice, your life. Go live it. Sean, thank you for taking the torch alone in this.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
As a reward, where do you want to plug yourself again? Give yourself a shout? Where can people find you?
SeanGrimseyFilms.com.
Sean in the hat.
It was there the whole time. You got to keep it in the background. SeanGrimseyFilms.com if you require any filmmaking services. I'm actually incredibly busy at the moment, but you know that means I'm good, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. Find out. As always, please do support All Fat Videos. Great content there. And big shout out to my friend Chris, who unfortunately couldn't make this episode, but hopefully we'll have him on there in the future. Thanks, Chris, for all your thoughts.
Hopefully. And if you want to see more from your favorite film is awful stuff, social network. What's the word?
Socials?
I want to say like collaborate.
Collaborations?
Conglomerate? Yeah, but is that the right word? Kingdom? The kingdom of your favorite film is awful. You can find it on Twitter at @favfilmisawful. And then it's on Facebook, Instagram, and Patreon as Your Favorite Film is Awful. And those are the places you can contact us, support us, leave us messages, tell us if a film is bad or if a film is good. This was a fan-submitted one. We have a list and we are making our way through it. But, you know, give us more films. We want to know what you want to watch. This was Jeremy.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Jeremy, I'd love to know your thoughts. So comments and all of the like, it'd be great to hear from you. Thanks so much. And anybody else, please just keep them coming. We're having a great time doing this. And it's fun. I hope you're having as much fun as we are.
It is lots of fun. And I'm hoping that you're having a lovely day. And that's it. That's the end of the episode. Bye-bye. Have a good one.
Bye.